I hide them in the cabinet. I keep them in a jar. For emergencies, you know, I keep them in the glove compartment of my car. And I can't live without them. They get me high and I can get on booze.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, ricksmithshow.com. So you may remember during the campaign, the Trumpster, you know, we're going to fight for American jobs. We're going to do a whole bunch of stuff. And he intervened in the carrier thing in Indiana, got some tax breaks for carrier. Saved a couple of jobs, and you give him credit where credit is due, but not to the extent that he's taking credit for. But what about Oreo? To me, you know, an icon of Americana, the Oreo cookie. Well, a good number of them now being made in Mexico, and we're, what, a year on now? I believe Wednesday going to be the anniversary of the mass layoffs. Here to talk about the reaction, what we should be doing, all of that. I've asked Ronald Banker to come talk with us. He's the BCTGM's International Strategic Campaign Coordinator, the guy in charge of all this stuff. Ron, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, how you doing?
I am good. So what's going on? Fill me in on the latest.
Sure, yeah. Well, I mean, just last week, the National AFL-CIO and its 56 affiliates under its new Good Jobs program just made the Mondelez Nabisco campaign, the premier campaign of the American labor movement. So that's big news, and we're moving ahead with that, integrating our capabilities, our current capabilities, with the AFL-CIO's capabilities, which, as you can imagine, is a pretty monster move. So we got that, and we are on college campuses now, Rick, going from college campus to college campus, talking to students about the impact for not only the country, but for their future if this business model continues.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, for those of us who have been boycotting the foreign-made Oreos for a while now, this is one of those times where you go, we need more of this stuff, we need more awareness, and you need to hold companies like Mondelez accountable for this and really put it in people's face and say, look, you've got to hold them accountable.
Yeah, and I tell you, the efforts of folks is definitely making a difference. As a matter of fact, as you well know, and a lot of your listeners know, that every year these corporations have to report to the Securities Exchange Commission with respect to a report to their shareholders on the end of the year. And they have to identify in that 10-K report risk factors that may impact the future of their business or their image or whatever. And it was interesting, in the last one that they released, it said that their public image may be damaged by where they put their factories, where they place their factories, and through social media and people's perception as to, like, how they produce products and where they produce products. So, you know, they don't put those things down unless they have to. So we feel that that's a definite indication that what we're doing is working.
No, you got to keep the pressure up. But here's the thing. What about those workers who their lives, their livelihoods, their families depended on those jobs? What's happened to them since?
Well, I'll tell you, it's the scenario we see all across the country, and it's a reason why this business model needs to change. You know, they're out of work. They're looking for jobs that tens of thousands of people are looking for. And as a result of so many people looking, you can imagine what the wage and benefit standards are of these jobs. They're like half if they're lucky, of what they left. So their homes are in jeopardy. Their communities in which they live, the tax base is on the downward slide, and they're finding themselves in need of more public services when there's less tax dollars to do it. So it's a story that's been growing and growing for the last 23 years since NAFTA. It would have been worse under TPP, but it can't get much worse than it is out there for families out of work.
Yeah, especially them. And the only thing I'd push back on, they didn't leave. They got thrown out.
There's
a big difference between voluntarily going and being kicked in the behind to the curb.
Well, absolutely, absolutely, and that's what happened on March the 23rd of last year, and that's why on the 23rd this year, we have a major undertaking called the Digital Day of Action, where we will partner with our with unions and student organizations and social activist organizations all across the country to send a loud, clear message to Mondelez Nabisco via social media. One thing to let you know, and you'll see in this Digital Day of Action, is a one-minute commercial for a PBS mini-documentary, which was just shot last month. It's ready for release all across the country, talking about Mondelez Nabisco, the business model, why it's got to change not only for the folks at Nabisco, but for workers all across the country. And that's going to hit 30 to 40 million homes, Rick, in the next year.
Outstanding. You know, the thing is you know, you brought up a moment ago the social, the taxing of our social safety net because of these jobs leaving. And you look at what's going on with the Trump administration, again, taking another whack at those programs that would help these laid off workers. And, you know, this story is just one of those things told way too often that, you know, and you look at the anger that's out there. It comes back to this scenario right here. And this is why I think it's important that we draw this line in the sand right now and make a company like Mondelez, make them pay and make them accountable for what they've done.
Absolutely. You know, if we can change the business model of a $30 billion corporation, then American consumers need to you will know that the power of the purse in this country is absolutely phenomenal. I mean, 5% of the world's population, 25% of the consumables that are made across the globe stop here and are bought here. And the power that people have to absolutely just alienate themselves from these products that are they're made under worker duress and grabbing the last dollar as they walk out the door in a community, I mean, they can stop it, and they can stop it through their purchasing decision.
Now, what do you say to the person, though, Ron, that says, look, we live in a global economy. We need businesses to be able to compete, and right now the competition model is to pursue that cheap labor. And then be able to bring their products back here. What do you say to them?
Well, what you say to them is, that type of business model, Rick, is a last man standing model. And I'll tell you what I've been saying to people out there. You know, nobody would give to an organization willingly give to an organization whose mission statement is totally opposed to their life standards. So you got to think of it when you buy that product. You are actually funding the next step phase of eliminating your job, the job of your neighbor, or the job of your family. So people have to understand that, yeah, it is a global economy. But unless everybody benefits and prospers in the economy, soon the high-end economies like the United States and Western Europe and Australia and those high-wage with a lot of disposable income will no longer exist. And then there will be no one to purchase the product, regardless of how cheap it's made.
That's an excellent point. I mean, at the end of the day, and I've been saying it for years, when we no longer have any money and no one has a job, we end up in a global depression because you end up with oversupply and no demand, and that, yep. That's a problem. We got a lot of supply, and I love my supply-siders,
yeah.
But when you've got too much supply and no demand, you got a problem.
Exactly. Yeah. The other part to the equation is that trade. This type of trade has not helped the Mexican workers either. I mean, we have people that we're in contact with in Mexico that tell us that the wage rate is less than a dollar an hour,
right?
And no benefits. The benefits they get is a ride to work on the bus. Well, I don't know how you eat that or send your kids to school with that or whatever. But I mean, that happens to be one of the generous benefits that the companies pass on to their employees.
So how do you deal with the desperation of the cross the border? Because you said this is trade. I would argue it's not trade at all. It's simply making products in exploitable conditions and then shipping them back here. I don't know what's trading about that.
Right. Well, there's no trade. You know, the whole concept of trade is you trade goods. But the whole premise of NAFTA and TPP is not to trade goods; it's to trade jobs and labor.
Right.
That was never that's. I agree with you. That's not trade. Trading is trading commodities and trading produced products, not the method of production and who does it.
And again, I keep coming back to this because it's important to remember. And I guess my problem is I'm old enough to remember when, a high school educated, white male or high school educated person could go get a working class job and be able to support themselves and have, you know, a decent wage and health care benefits and a bit of retirement security.
Yep.
I talk to people every day, and that is gone, Ron. I mean, you know, the ability to come and find a job if you have good work ethic and willing to, you know, do some backbreak, all those things are done. So what do you say to the person saying, well, that's 20th century. We now live in the information age. All of those people who lost jobs at making Oreos and at Nabisco, they should get jobs doing computer stuff.
Well, what I say to them is what I say to people that tell me about the Trade Readjustment Act and how great it is. I mean, first of all, there's very few people that actually engage it because, you know, just like it was, and you can remember this, Rick, in the 80s and 90s and when it came to steel or whatever it was, the TRA, I mean, the biggest job that you could get was a cross-country truck driver. And they're still training people to do cross-country truck driving.
Yeah.
And you're not going to take a 50, 55, 60-year-old person and put them back into school and have them work in the high-tech industry. I mean, I'm not saying they're not capable. I'm just saying that they are at a point in their career when it's 10 years to retirement, not 4 or 5 years on training, and then getting into a field that quite frankly, I mean, they were never trained for or never had access to or never used on a routine basis during the course of their life.
Yeah, and you're competing with kids coming out of college who are going to work for far less than they were making, you know, making Oreos, for instance.
You are. And, you know, you talk about the kids from college. You know, when we go to these, and we've been on 23 or 24 college campuses, and we're headed to the University of Massachusetts this week. But I will tell you, when you say to them, how many folks in this room have a father, mother, or a relative that has lost their job due to jobs being sent across the country? And I'll tell you, 50 to 60% of those 18, 19, 21-year-old students raise their hand.
Yeah. Do you think this is why we've seen, especially in that generation, a bump in people who support the idea of labor unions and expanding access for workers to join and form unions because they saw their parents get screwed over?
Absolutely. They saw parents that were absolutely loyal to a company, wanted to do a good job every day and put in every ounce of effort that was needed to do that good job, and see them cut off at the knees. And their pensions impacted, or in the case of some, they had a pension, they had health care, and the companies filed bankruptcy, ran to federal court, and a judge with a stroke of a pen took it from them.
And again, I keep coming back to, because I hear the same exact stories, you know, of people going, you know, dad missed my baseball games, or missed, you know, this,
yep,
the plays, or missed all of this stuff, or mom missed all of this stuff, and only to find out that, you know, down the road, the company just cut them off like trash.
Right. I'll tell you the other thing, Rick, too, you know, a lot of these corporations will come out and say, well, we just don't know where the work ethic went, whatever. Well, I'll tell you where the work ethic went. The work ethic went when these younger workers coming into the labor pool saw their moms and dads lose everything for like and absolutely dedicate their entire lives to a corporation, and they sit there and they say to themselves, "You mean I give up everything and get nothing in the end?" I mean, these companies want to blame a whole lot of societal things as to why things happen, and they actually created a lot of the bad items that are coming down the pike right now.
No, well, it's that loyalty thing. I mean, once you break that social compact of we're in this together and that we will rise or fall together, that again, you know, puts us where we are today. The question I have, and you know, going back and looking at your campaign against Mondelez, which again I think is a fantastic thing, because I think hopefully we're able to hold all companies accountable, and they look at this and go, I don't want that to happen to me, and maybe they come back to a bit of sanity. Is there any way back to that, or are we just too far down the road?
No, I don't think we're too far down the road, but I got to tell you what this country's got to get away from, and unfortunately with you know, the current theme out there is that, you know, the more a corporation makes, the better off people are. We know since the 80s, trickle down economics never worked. It was more or less tinkle down economics, and we know the recipient of on the bad side of that.
Yep.
It's not beyond repairing. But what people have to understand is there's got to be a code of ethics and a morality that's inherent with these corporations that says, look, we need to make a profit. Nobody denies that. But you don't have to take every single dime out of every community and suck it dry and then move on to the next one and do that on a global basis. Because sooner or later, once the world economy is destroyed, right, yeah, you might have 500 or 600 people that, like, are billionaires, right? But the rest, it's going to take the rest of the world to pull them out. I don't know where they plan to buy their groceries or buy their fuel or to do all the things that keep their lifestyle the way it is if there's nobody around to do the work for them.
I mean, you know, at the end of the day, there was just a report the other day that I saw that said, you know, New York City has more millionaires by a huge percent, but they also have, by almost the same percent, more people falling into poverty.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I mean, it's really just, again, it's that redistribution of wealth, and it comes back to the work. It comes back to reward for work. If you want to get more information about Wednesday's Day of Action, bctgm.org. We'll get some links at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Ronald Baker's name. It'll take you right there. Ronald, I appreciate you taking a little time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
The fight. Keep up the faith. I look forward to talking to you again.
Take care, man. Bye-bye.
All right. Always great talk with you, Ronald Baker. Again, bctgm.org, the website. I suggest taking a look. And, oh, by the way, make sure you flip the bag over. If you're going to buy Oreos, we have stopped buying Oreos. But flip the bag over and make sure that they're made in the U.S. Anything that says Mexico on it, put them back. In fact, as my little protest, I actually turn them around so that the first thing people see is where it's made. Just even though they do kind of tuck it under the fold. So you got to look for that. I'll take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Yeah, I don't want to lose. Chocolate covered cream filled cookie, built by Nabisco.